Well, this is a story I spotted in the journal Science about the world's most accurate ever atomic clock, which has been built by the National Institute for Standards and Technology in the US. And this is a clock which is accurate to about 1 second in 10 billion years. Now, this is what's called an atomic clock. And these are clocks that work by looking at the oscillations of atoms, which are caught inside incredibly controlled environments.
Why on earth do we need to be so accurate that we need to look at atoms for timekeeping? Why aren't our normal clocks good enough?
Well, of course, for telling the time of day, you don't need this sort of accuracy. But a lot of scientific experiments revolve around timing things very accurately. And I guess probably the most everyday example of why we need very good clocks is in GPS sat-nav that we all have in our cars. Because sat-nav works by timing how long it takes pulses of radiation to travel from satellites in orbit around the Earth to our cars on the streets. And by timing how long those pulses take, you can tell exactly how far away you are from those satellites. And so you've got to have an incredibly good idea what the time is.
So how do you use atoms to make a clock that's that accurate?
Well, if you think about a pendulum clock and why a pendulum clock isn't very good, it's relying on a pendulum swinging at a very steady rate. And in practice, you've got friction between different parts of that clock, and you've got friction with the air around the pendulum bob. And those are all affecting the rate at which that pendulum swings. So you want to try and put this clock in a really controlled environment. Now, it's quite hard to make a controlled environment the size of a pendulum clock. It's much easier to take an atom in the lab and try and put it in an environment where it's not interacting with any other material around it. Now, atoms tend to produce waves at very characteristic frequencies. And if you think back to school chemistry, you may at some point have put some copper in a Bunsen burner flame that produces this brilliant green light. And the reason it produces that brilliant green light is because there are electrons inside that copper that make a transition to a particular frequency. And light is made of waves. Waves have particular frequencies. And that happens to map on to the green part of the electromagnetic spectrum.
So I understand that an atom is producing a wavelength, but how does that help us tell the time?
So if you imagine taking your atom and you're actually measuring the electromagnetic wave coming off that atom, you can count the cycles of that light. Now, if it's visible light, you've got millions of billions of cycles every second. And that's one of the reasons why making atomic clocks is so very difficult. Up until now, you tended to use cesium atoms, which oscillates much slower at billions of times a second. So whilst that's very hard to do yourself with a stopwatch, that's about the rate that computer processors process data at. So you can start to count those cycles. The reason why we haven't used ytterbium up until now, I think, is because it oscillates at optical frequencies, and it's so very hard to count those cycles going past.
So you know however many billions of cycles go past, each time that happens, a second's gone past and it could turn it into a clock.
Yes, these cycles are basically exactly like the pendulum swinging in your pendulum clock, but they're so much more accurate that they can keep tying good to, let's say, about a second in 10 billion years in the case of this clock that was written about in Science this week.
So a second every 10 billion years, that's pretty impressive. So we just need to scale it into a wristwatch for me and we'll be sorted. If you want to find out any more about the stories we've been chatting about today, you can find more information, including references to the papers, on our website at thenakedscientist.com/news.
Thank you, team. You're listening to The Naked Scientists. I'm Chris Smith and I'm currently in Perth, Western Australia, with my fellow naked scientist, Victoria Gill. So far, we've taken part in Australia's National Science Week. We've delivered a science lesson for kids across thousands of miles of the outback. And we've got up close and personal with Perth's dolphin population. This week, we've heard about a promising new breakthrough for the treatment of muscular dystrophy. And we've got news that pesticides, including the stuff we use to deflea dogs and deal with head lice, and which we previously regarded as safe, might be bad for your brain.